Chapter 12. Lights in the Night Sky. The twilight sky was free of clouds as the sunset faded over the starlit Marauder's left railing. Stars brightened into view against the deepening contrast of the lightless heavens behind them. As the sprawling countryside of Safshan sped by beneath them, the Aliani Sea was to their backs. Trees threw shadows that ran the length of city streets before the shadow of the horizon reached up to swallow all others. Juliana looked at the viewscreen, adjusting it several times. The starlit Marauder slowed to a gentle stop above a high pond. The water was a placid mirror. It was the only thing clearly visible below.
"Something wrong," Teba called out from the top of the steps. "We stopped."
"I know we stopped. I stopped us. There's nothing to navigate by down there. We'll have to stop for the night," Juliana explained, unbuckling herself from the captain's harness.
"I had very much hoped to sleep on land tonight," Teba said.
He took a step onto the deck, keeping one foot on the top step and a firm hold on the railing.
"I'd feel better about sleeping in the air than landing who knows where in the middle of Safshan," Juliana responded.
"We are hardly near the middle. This is barely on shore."
"I think I know where we are," Teba said. "But there is a poor view from below. If you promise no tricks with the ship's level, I would like to look over the edge."
Juliana held her arms out and away from both her body and the ship's wheel. She walked over toward the steps as Teba edged past her in a crouch. Thoughts of throwing him over the edge were just silly fancies. There was only so long she could remain angry with him.
"I think I know where we are," Teba announced after a moment.
He had his arm wrapped about the railing and was craning his head over the side to look straight down.
"Where?"
"Do you know where Visasi Lake is?" Teba asked.
"No."
"Well, that is it, just below us. I have fished in it before," Teba said. "If you bring us low, I can guide us the rest of the way and we can have proper beds tonight."
"Not a bad heading you picked for us. I had thought we might spend days wandering to find our way there," Juliana said. "You think you can find your way at night?"
"I have before from the ground. I think I can from on high. If you can just tilt that screen so that I might view it from the stair, I will tell you where to go," Teba told her.
He slunk back from the railing to the safety of the top step.
"How far is it?" Juliana asked.
She had made no move to strap herself back into the harness. It had been a long day's flying and her legs were cramped and stiff.
"By horse? A half day through woodlands and shallow creeks. By airship? Some fraction of that, I would assume," Teba replied.
"There had better be a hot meal and a soft bed waiting when we get there. Are you sure you're worth that much trouble? Waking some poor woman in the middle of the night?"
Juliana stepped back before the ship's wheel. She kept her gaze on Teba as she reached down slowly to retrieve the captain's harness. She raised an eyebrow, waiting for Teba's reply before she buckled the first strap.
"We will be welcomed. You have my promise of that," Teba said.
He stifled a yawn.
"What have you got to be tired for? I'm the one who's been up here all day flying us about."
"I am a creature of action. Small spaces and long waits weary me more than you can know. Now turn that glass so I can guide us."
Juliana finished securing herself to the helm and did as Teba requested. The nightscape of Safshan was a wasteland of shadowed forests and undulating hills. Here and there, darkened buildings lay in clusters. Dogs howled in the airship's wake, disturbed by the lowness of its passing. Teba had insisted that he would steer them best from low, the lower the better, just missing the treetops by his preference. The land was known to him. It was an hour and no more before the Blade Priest signaled that they should land.
"Light it in the pasture there," Teba pointed, gesturing at the viewing screen. "Slowly, so you do not wake the cows."
Juliana blinked back the sleep from her eyes and rubbed at them with a free hand, while using the other to guide them down.
"No cows, got it,"
she muttered to herself, fatigue slurring her words. With a thump and a creak of settling metalwork, the starlit Marauder pressed its keel into the soft soil of the pasture. It rocked slightly as Juliana released the magic that steadied it and allowed it to balance on its own. She lowered the side hatches and once more extracted herself from the captain's harness,
for the last time that night, she dearly hoped. "You go on ahead," Juliana said through a yawn, "and clear the way." Tiba nodded and went below, emerging a moment later on the ramp. She watched as he hopped a post and rail fence that kept the herd animals away from the little farmhouse. Dogs barked as he reached the door, but it was too far away for Juliana to tell if he had knocked first. A light appeared inside, spilling out through the shutters of the windows, and through the door as it opened, silhouetting Tiba and whoever had opened the door. Juliana could only assume it was his woman when he took her in his arms. Juliana leaned her weight on the stair rail as she went below, distrusting her balance after an interminable day on deck. Her legs had grown so accustomed to the fixed position she kept them in for most of her time at the wheel that they protested any other.
"I shouldn't feel this old."
Tiba's three companions were waiting below when Juliana got there, hanging back at the top of the ramp. It seemed they were wary of offending their prospective hosts as well. The four of them watched as a pair of large dogs jumped and bounded about, frantic for Tiba's attention. The blade priest, with his rune blade still strapped to his back, crouched low and put an arm around each, plying them with rough affection as he craned his neck to carry on talking with the figure in the door. Tiba stood and hollered back toward the ship. Juliana understood nothing of Safshani, but followed along when the three Safshan soldiers headed for the house, gear in hand. Once inside the gates, the dogs turned their attentions to the new visitors, growling and sniffing, poking their noses indelicately at the unfamiliar humans. Juliana had no fear of dogs. They were simple creatures that had no hope against her shielding spell. A lingering impression from Soria made her wary of them, though. Noisy things that they were.
A good guard dog was hard to fool,
and both more vigilant and quicker to raise an alarm than a human guardsman. No dog feared to look the fool if the alarm was a false one. Tiba made introductions in Safshani. Juliana understood her own name and little else. The woman was introduced as Yushika. If Tiba had been lying about his disinterest in Juliana's womanly virtues, Yushika gave no evidence. She was thin nowhere,
but was certainly narrower about the waist than either her hips or bust.
She weighed easily twice what Juliana did. The five of them followed Yushika into the house. Juliana was the last to enter, noticing the curious eyes looking down from the lit window on the second floor.
"I wonder if those children up there are Tiba's."
The house opened up directly into a common kitchen and a dining room dominated by a long trestle table and an open hearth with a kettle on. Juliana did not recognize the smell, but some sort of stew was kept warm within. There was much chattering in Safshani while Yushika ladled bowls for the three soldiers. Their dinners in hand, they exited through a back door. Yushika poured three more bowls, handing one each to Juliana and Tiba, and keeping one for herself. She sat at the table and invited them to join her.
"Yushika, you may speak in front of Juliana. She is the twin of the companion I told you of," Tiba said, speaking Keshi.
"Of course, I should have known the name," Yushika said, her voice seeming more real when it spoke words Juliana understood.
"You are twin-born?" Juliana blurted.
Her voice had recovered from the shock faster than her wits.
"Yes, it is one of the many secrets the Blade Priests know," Tiba said. "Not all of our number are twin-born, but we often pass it down in our blood. Taking a twin-born mistress is a great boon in two senses. They are more likely to mother twin-born children, of course, and
I can put up with his blabbering about other worlds without thinking him a madman," Yushika joked.
"She could, but she chooses to think me one anyway," Tiba replied, sharing a smile with his mistress.
"So you must know all sorts of scandalous things about me then," Juliana ventured.
She felt suddenly self-conscious in front of the woman Tiba had so dismissively compared her to the previous day.
"Oh, I think he cleans the stories with soap and brushes before I get to hear them. You would think that I was a princess or a delicate maiden by the way he dances around some subjects, but I'm mother to three boys who bleed dirt and hunt anything that will hold still long enough to get hit with a rock, not to mention two flowering daughters, the eldest of whom seems determined to get herself with child before she's wed and has a new boy in mind for the job twice a season," Yushika said,
The Safshan woman gave Teba a playful sidelong glare. All are yours, Teba? Juliana asked. The shock on her host's face made Juliana blush, but rather than take offense, Yushika leaned back in her chair and laughed.
She's every bit the girl you told me of, Yushika said to Teba. No highborn lass would ask such a question in any company, and no lowborn lass would risk her skin saying such a thing at all in front of a woman who might take offense.
Teba smiled, nodding his agreement.
I told you as much, but yes, the children are all mine. Nihan will begin his training at the temple next season. It took me some time before I purged all the girl children from my loins and began fathering boys, Teba said. They all chuckled at that.
Juliana could not recall ever seeing Rikashi so at ease. Teba was new to her, but it seemed like his twin in all other ways until now.
You can sleep with my girls tonight, Juliana. They share a room upstairs in the back of the house. They can share a bed so you can have one to yourself, Yushika told her.
Thank you, but I wouldn't want to impose on your daughters, Juliana said. I can bunk on the ship.
Oh, nonsense. You might do some good with those daggers you hide if some boy sneaks up to see Mushina in the night.
It would not be the first time, Yushika said, waggling a finger. At once, all three perked up. A shudder had passed them by, some great rippling wave in the ether.
Did you feel that? Yushika asked.
Teba nodded.
Yes, Juliana confirmed. I don't like that. The war has gotten so close of late. I've been thinking I might have to pack the children and head up to the temple, Yushika said.
No, Teba told her. Keep away from cities and strongholds if you must flee. Farms and villages are best. The wilderness if those prove unsafe.
Juliana spooned soup into her mouth and kept quiet. She felt the guilt of being part of the side responsible for the slaughter that took place within their lands. The fact that she hated her former oath father, the fact that it was Teba who had shorn clean that bond, the fact that she had sacrificed her crew and risked her safety to bring Teba home, none of it made up for the fact that the Kadrin army was ransacking the whole of Safshan as she sat eating her soup. Another sensation caught her attention, weaker than the first. A second stirring in the ether was not far away.
Did you feel that one? Juliana asked, seeing no reaction by her hosts.
No, both said in unison.
They looked at one another and shared a simpering smile.
Not now, Teba, hold it together.
Something shook in the ether again, Juliana said. She looked to the windows at the far side of the house. The leaded glass showed nothing but glare from the light within. She shook her head, her soup beginning to feel restless in her stomach.
I don't like this.
Teba pushed back his chair with a grating scrape of wood. Without a word, he went to the back door of the house and opened it. It was, once again, the Rikashi she remembered, not the love-struck fool he had seemed a moment ago. She slid from her chair and joined him, some prideful part of her mind taking note that she had done so in relative silence.
Can you see anything? She asked.
She could see over his shoulder, but he blocked the doorway. The hilt of his rune blade obstructed her view as well.
Can you not? Teba replied.
Smoke,
Yushika said from inside. Juliana turned to see her looking out the window, hands cupped at the sides of her eyes to shield the indoor light. Juliana turned to look skyward. It took her a moment, but she saw a star appear and disappear again, and she realized that there was a swath of stars that seemed to be missing.
I think I can make it out against the stars, she confirmed. We shouldn't take a chance. Let's get out of here. Wake the children. Take what you can carry and let's get to the airship before we're noticed.
Yes, Teba replied, not turning his attention from the smoky sky. Take them. Find them somewhere safe. Well east of here.
I know that look, Rikashi, Juliana said. You're coming with us. You can even bring those soldiers if you hurry. Let's move.
She grabbed Teba by his upper arm. He shook her off with an annoyed flinch. He turned then, his eyes seeking hers.
Keep them safe. I have to go, Teba said. This is what I am.
He spun and jogged out the door, heading for the stables where his men and Yushika's horses could be found.
Gather your children, Juliana ordered Yushika.
The Safshan woman seemed oblivious as she ambled over to gaze out after the father of her children.
"He never was much for goodbyes," Yushika said.
Tears welled in her eyes as she stared into the night. They could hear men's voices from the darkness, the sound of horses. Juliana tugged at Yushika's arm, snapping her from the stupor into which she was falling.
"Yes, yes, the children."
Tiba's horse flew down the winding road, little more than a rutted path that led to the nearby village of Ainza. The horse, Gigi, was one Tiba trusted to carry him bareback with just a bridle to guide her. The soldiers that had flown with him back to Safshan were less familiar with the land and their horses, and were well behind. Even if Tiba had not known the way, Gigi did, and would know the way as well in sunshine or fog. There were flashes of light on occasion. They were still well ahead, but he could tell for certain that they were coming from Ainza. A calm settled into him as galloping hooves shook the ground. Screams and blades grew louder, and his children were being herded aboard a vessel that belonged to their enemy. Battle approached. The hands that held Gigi's reins would relax soon about the hilt of a rune blade.
The comforting feel as natural as clutching Yushika close.
"I am made for this. I will not fail."
The tree-lined path showed glimpses of fire between the foliage. Whatever tragedy would befall Ainza, this was to be a mission of vengeance, not rescue. He was going to arrive too late to save the villagers.
"Indrietho, anamakne ubtayo, wanuzar proniduk," Tiba chanted,
taking his hands from the reins long enough to weave a stronger shield spell than he normally brought to battle.
The rush of ether he felt as the spell acted through him gave him an extra measure of confidence. A palpable feeling of protection washed through him and surrounded him. The path opened up at the outskirts of the village where farmers had plowed the fields and harvested autumn's crops. Gigi trampled cabbage and squash vines beneath her hooves as Tiba's eyes scanned the village for signs of the attacking force. He traced the line of burning homes but could as yet see nothing. His milky eye, the one that saw the ether, noticed a vortex, ether disappearing into a void with no source. Another building ignited with a crackle and a whoosh. Tiba slid down from Gigi's back and gave the horse a swat on the rump, startling her away. There was no point in dooming the beast as well. The rune blade found its way into Tiba's hand without a conscious thought. Instinct, training, rote repetition. He had only his adversary to consider. All else was a part of himself. The blade would obey his mind as well as his hands and feet. He went into a low crouch, keeping the latest of the burning buildings between him and the converging ether. That had to be where the demon was. Unfortunately, he was not remaining stationary.
"Hello," a cheery voice called to him in passable Safshan. "You ought not to go sneaking about with a source like yours. It demeans you and does little to conceal your location."
Tiba saw past flames and smoke to the image that had played itself in his mind 100 times. The demon looked much like his son, but paler, slighter. Rashan Solaran carried himself like one with a hobbyist's casual interest in battle, betraying neither fear nor tension nor focus. Tiba advanced, unsure how to close the gap to bring his blade to bear. A creature such as the Kadrin demon would not fall prey to a simple headlong rush, as would most opponents. He seemed to be in a talkative mood. Tiba was not above deception.
"I am Tiba of the Blade," he gave his formal title.
"I think you already know who I am. I can tell by the fear in you," the demon replied.
He held a serrated blade in hand, dragging the tip in the dirt.
"I have no fear of death, demon. I..."
"Of course not. I was not implying that you did. You fear for them," Rashan said.
He turned to point to the village inn. On the upper floor, there were faces pressed to the windows, watching their fate being decided below.
"You are truly the monster they say you are," Tiba goaded.
He kept to his slow advance, thinking to catch Rashan Solaran at a distance he could fight from before the demon realized his peril.
"If you want to save them, give me a reason," the demon said.
Tiba stopped and swallowed back a lump in his throat.
Rashan Solaran had spoken the last in fluent Takalish.
"Ah, I think you understand me," Rashan continued, obviously taking note of Teba's reaction. The demon smiled at him.
"I do," Teba replied, still using Safshan. He was unsure of the demon's ploy, but he knew he could not allow himself to be distracted. Rashan the Deceiver. Rashan's bargain. Teba knew his history.
"Well, now before you decide, put away that blade."
"I have a rather stern policy against sparing creatures who offer me harm."
"I make no exceptions. None, not even for dragons," Rashan promised. As a show of faith, the demon sheathed his blade.
"Decide on what?" Teba asked. He lowered his rune blade but did not return it to its sheath.
"On whether I should spare the rest of Safshan."
"You can decide that any time you like, demon," Teba yelled back. His hand itched to bring his rune blade to bear. Some wiser part of him held his hands in check. There was something odd about the demon's manner.
"Could this be his legendary trickery at work? Has he found a weakness in my thought's armor? Why can I not see this clearly for the ruse it must be?"
"I have a task for you if you know how to use a half spear as well as that rune blade." Rashan crossed his arms. The statement was a challenge.
"It is the same weapon. You clearly know that, or you would not have known to ask," Teba said.
He felt his breath coming quicker. He was trapped between instinct and logic. Victory, his blood told him, would render the decision moot. Failure, he knew, would spell doom for the village. And who knew how much more of Safshan? Delay and parley bought time.
"But time for what?"
"Yes, but are you the same man to wield it?"
"I am."
"A friendly contest, then," Rashan said, already drawing his wicked blade. "Prove to me that you are worth my effort to spare and sleep in a peaceful land tonight." Rashan sprang forward, forcing Teba to retreat a step to set his parry. Rashan launched a series of wild, looping slashes. The attacks would have been comically inept if not for the speed and power behind the strikes. Teba angled his parries, ducking and diverting rather than attempting to meet force with force. He moved about the blade like its fulcrum, using the leverage of the demon's strikes to quicken his step.
"Oh, you are good," Rashan marveled, clearly impressed with his skills. "If you are this good in the other world, I think you shall do quite well."
The demon quickened the pace of his attacks. The looping, lazy swings that carried the weight of ogres behind them became a fencer's measured strikes, snapping smartly from parry to riposte. There was no loss of power behind the cuts and thrusts, however. Teba tried to keep on offensive to blunt his foe's onslaught, but there was simply no opening. He worked his blade in a frenzy just to keep the demon's sword at bay.
"Simply remarkable," Rashan said, stepping back suddenly.
The demon's blade disappeared into its sheath like a cat retracts its claws. "Aside from resisting the temptation to use magic, I was actually giving my best effort there." Teba did not mirror his opponent's lowered defenses. He kept his rune blade tight in both hands, sweat wetting the leather-wrapped handle. His breath was coming heavy from his frantic defense, but he was by no means spent. He took a step toward the demon.
"Careful! Another step and I may reconsider my largesse," Rashan said.
Teba stopped in his tracks. "I could have them picking bits of you out of those trees over yonder. Do not mistake your swordsmanship for being my equal in battle. Put that blade away and I will spare you, and this town, at least conditionally."
"What condition is that?" Teba asked.
The rush of battle was beginning to fade. The pounding his muscles had taken against the demon's blows was starting to sink in. His rune blade began to feel heavier than the weighted practice blades he had used as a lad.
"Put the blade away, then I will tell you," the demon said, daring to turn his back on Teba.
Every instinct told him to bury his blade in the defenseless opponent he saw before him.
"No, he is far from defenseless. His very body is a ruse."
Not even a shielding spell protected the demon, but Rashan Solaran was also a warlock, and likely watching his movements in the ether. Teba forced himself to put his rune blade back in its sheath.
"Where are you in Tellurak right now?" Rashan asked.
Teba said nothing. A long moment passed.
I have a job for you there, and I would like to know how soon you might get to it. If you would rather I go back to destroying your homeland, so be it.
I am in the Cardia, Tiba admitted. I am a traveling scholar and warrior. Much of my time is spent away from my home.
Roshan grinned. Excellent. I have a task for you.